Kirkla. It sounds like a 1960s television character made out of a rug. It's actually an environmental law that can have a big effect on federal contracting. One recent Kirkla case shows how gasoline contracts from World War II can affect a procurement today. To explain this all, in this week's Legal Loop segment, we turn to attorney Joe Petrillo. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so first start by telling us what Kirkla is and how does it enter into the case you're going to tell us about.
Well, that's the statute which, as amended, set up the whole Superfund system where toxic waste sites are cleaned up by the government or by those who polluted them, and the liability for that is apportioned among the parties in accordance with the statutory scheme. This particular Kirkla case comes out of the production of aviation fuel, aviation gasoline, during World War II.
Which was in high demand, I guess.
Enormous demand. And the priority was let's make more of it and not let's handle the toxic waste that's a byproduct of the process. Toxic waste was sulfuric acid and acid sludge, nasty stuff, and reprocessing that and taking care of it was not a priority back during the war.
All right, so those contracts for the government are over now. In fact, there's no such aircraft that even burn that kind of fuel left in the Air Force. So, what's going on today?
Well, this is an interesting case because it's one that concerns the contracts that were 70 plus years old, and it also is the latest episode in a. And litigation that started in 1991. So the lesson here is that these things can persist both in terms of the contracting liabilities and in terms of the litigation that takes place. In this particular instance, the companies that created the aviation gasoline were working under a special contract that they thought indemnified them for all costs, including the cleanup costs. The government disagreed, and the case was litigated at the Court of Federal Claims. The first case was reversed because the judge's wife owned stock in an oil company, that was considered to be a conflict of interest. So they sent it back down to the Court of Federal Claims, where the judge held against the oil companies. Now, by a 2-to-1 margin, the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit has reversed that.
So it's saying that the oil companies of today are not responsible for cleaning up messes that they made in the 1940s.
Well, they're not liable for it anyway.
Is it the same companies? I mean, they used to, Texaco. I mean, some of the oil company names go back a long time.
Yeah, they've been merged into other companies. I mean, the companies still exist in some.
There's no Esso or Sinclair and all that. The dinosaur gas stations. Those have all been swallowed up.
Sure. These are the successors in interest to those companies who've bought them up or reorganized. In this particular case, it's kind of odd because usually, at the end of the case, at the end of the contract, there aren't a whole lot of liabilities that continue. But here, under special wartime legislation, the companies entered into unique contracts where their profit was limited, but the government assumed very broad risks, including new or additional taxes, fees, or charges relating to the production or delivery of the gas. And the question was whether those included environmental cleanup costs. The judge in the Court of Federal Claims, a very good judge, Judge Wheeler, thought they didn't, but he got reversed on appeal. And the appellate court went into great detail about the contracts and what the dictionary meaning of the terms are. I think the most important thing, and usually this is the case, I think, in contract interpretation suits, is what's the context? And here the context was, let's get this stuff made. We'll keep your profit down, but we'll take care of these additional costs, we being the government. That was the deal that was struck, and so the interpretation, I think, was consistent with that deal.
So, in other words, if I'm the military, for example, and I enter into a fuel contract with XYZ oil company, and under the current law, if that contractor is hit with, say, a state tax that didn't exist before the contract started, they can get reimbursement for the government for that tax.
Well, yes, there are some limitations on that that the court discusses under the Anti-Deficiency Act. For instance, this looks like an open-ended indemnification. And as I discussed with Emily 2 weeks ago in connection with terms of service and software licenses, usually open-ended indemnifications aren't going to be legal because of the Anti-Deficiency Act. But
that is to say the government could be forced into paying money it doesn't have, in other words.
Yeah, basically. And it basically deals with the entering into a liability that's not covered by an appropriation. Here, however, special wartime legislation allowed the government to do that, given the emergency we had in World War II. So that exempted this particular contract or set of contracts from the problem I've described.
So are oil companies today faced with cleaning up of these World War II era sludge dumps? Is that something they're being faced, forced to do now by the government?
Well, I think these particular sites were cleaned up long ago. The question that lingers on is who's liable for it? And now with this latest decision by the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, it's going to be the government, although the case goes back to the Court of Federal Claims to determine the exact amount of damages for which the government's liable.
All right. Well, we'll have to – and that one's really not over yet. We're speaking with Joe Petrillo, a procurement attorney of the Washington firm Petrillo and Powell. And another recent case that was kind of interesting is what the basis that the government can use to award a sole source contract.
Yes. Well, this is a case for the GAO bid protest case led by the Forest Service for the next generation air tankers that they need to put out forest fires, of course. And there was a bid protest on the procurement that led to it going back to a reevaluation and a reaward. And after the second round of awards, there was another set of protests. And one of them was settled by agreeing to give the protester a sole source contract for two tankers with options for more. Now,
that sounds like a no-no right on the face of it.
It is a no-no. There, the cases basically say that you can't use settling a bid protest as a way around the statutes for competition or the other legal requirements applicable to contracting.
I mean, is it possible a contracting officer didn't know that?
Well, there's an interesting fact here.
If I know it, they must know it.
They entered into this settlement, and as soon as they did, someone realized that the sole source contract had to be approved by the senior procurement executive. So they went to the senior procurement executive, and they said, well, we want
to close the door when they walked in.
Well, it was even worse than that. They were trying to justify the sole source contract on the grounds that this was a supplier we needed to maintain for a national emergency or industrial mobilization, which is an exemption to the requirement for competition.
Right.
And they said, well, the company said they're going to go out of business if they don't get this contract. And the special senior procurement executive, to her credit, said, well, let's look into that. And she went out and got some consultants. They looked at the situation. They said, nope, this company is not going to go out of business after all. She refused to authorize the sole source contract, but she was overruled by the Assistant Secretary for Administration, and the matter went forward.
Wow. So what was the final disposition of it?
Well, the final disposition is that the other tanker contractors who wanted to compete for this requirement successfully protested at GAO, and GAO upheld the protest and said, if you can't come up with a legal justification for this sole source contract, you need to compete this requirement, which is not a huge surprise given the case law they've had in the past.
So, yeah, for something that big, I guess probably one of the few justifications for sole source is there is only one source.
Well, there is that. There's also, of course, an urgency determination that as the case developed, the government tried to rely on. But, you know, they were awarding a 9-year contract, and you can't do that on the grounds of urgency.
All right. So what does that mean for people looking to sole source them? It's back to the rules, in other words.
Yeah, back to the rules. And, you know, when we discussed this case earlier, you came up with an interesting possible loophole, Tom. You suggested that maybe if there was legal ground for a sole source contract, the government might be able to use it as part of a settlement, for instance, for a bid protest. And I've been thinking about that, and I think you might have a good point there. So we don't have a case that says that yet, but it's an interesting loophole to try. Are you sure you're not an attorney?
No, but I've been dealing with your columns and interviews now for more than 20 years, so I guess maybe you've turned me into one.
I guess some of it's rubbed off.
All right. Joe Petrillo is a procurement attorney with the law firm Petrillo & Powell. As always, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.